The Laughter Permitted podcast is brought to you by Ally. Do it right.
We're back.
Yes. Welcome to season 5 of Laughter Permitted. I'm Julie Foudy alongside my co-host, as always, Lynn Olzowie. Hola, Lynn.
Hi, Julie.
I don't know about you, sister, but it seems like just the other day we were singing, who's got a podcast? We do, we do. Who's got a podcast? We do, we do. And literally a sneeze later and season 5 is upon us, which is so crazy. So I've got my red sequin party dress on.
Oh, nice.
Yes. Ready to rumble, party people.
We are excited to be back with the Dope Village and are kicking off the season strong with the return of Abby Wambach to the podcast.
Or Mary Abigail Wambach, as her new teachers called her as a kid. Abby was, you may recall, our first ever episode of Laughter Permitted with her wife, Glennon Doyle. And with Abby, there really is no shortage of things to talk about. So, of course, we asked her if she'd come back. And along with being a World Cup champion, two-time Olympic gold medalist, and legend in the game of soccer, Abby is a New York Times best-selling author with 2 books, Forward and Wolfpack. There's also a young reader's edition of Wolfpack. And my goodness, Abby has lived a journey. We talk about the highs and the lows. And believe me, she's had plenty of both. The first part of the interview, we kind of geek out on old soccer stuff, so consider yourself warned. And the second half, we discuss how the journey has shaped so much of what she is doing now. Always a treat to catch up with my friends. So get comfortable listening. It's Mary Abigail Wambach. Hey there, Dope Village. Lynn and I have been involved in women's sports our entire lives. And truly, we've never been more excited for what's to come in this women's sports space. And one big reason, Ally. Ally has made a commitment to an equal media investment in women's and men's sports.
And that means more money going to women's sports and more visibility for what these incredible athletes are accomplishing. Ally is on a mission to change the game for women's sports.
So here at Laughter Permitted, we're going to keep telling the stories of trailblazing women. And every time you listen in, you are part of that change. To learn more about Ally, go to ally.com. Hey there, Dope Village. As y'all know, Ally has backed Laughter Permitted since day one of our podcast as our financial ally. And honestly, Lynn, I might just tattoo Ally on my forehead. And Ally is currently on a mission to change the game for women's sports.
And get this, along with being sponsors of the National Women's Soccer League, Atlantic Coast Conference, United States Golf Association, and the Las Vegas Aces, Ally has committed to an equal media investment in women's and men's sports.
And you, my friends, can be part of the change by watching your favorite athletes crush it on TV, by going to women's sporting events in person, by, I don't know, maybe listening to every single episode of this amazing podcast on trailblazing women. Because every time you show up for women's sports, you are helping move the game forward. You can learn more about Ally by visiting ally.com.
Kick back, relax, and unwind. Let's have a good time finding the joy in life. We're smiling so bright, talking and laughing combined. Feeling all right, get comfortable listening. It's Laughter Permitted.
Was up?
Oh, look at that mic.
What's up?
This setup
is amazing.
Your camera looks really good too, Emma.
Yeah, what's the deal with your camera there?
Your lighting is fantastic.
I did an event with a company a couple of weeks ago, and they sent this Sony 4K camera. It's like a mirrorless camera or whatever. And I was like, all right, like, who do you want me to send the stuff back to? And they're like, just keep it. And I was like, okay, this is amazing. And so this is what my face looks like on all my event stuff now.
It's really nice.
I know. It just automatically blurs out the background. So it like doesn't look like we're always trying to like get people to buy Untamed.
But you know what? It's working. It's working.
So what's going on, everybody? Everybody Hi. Good?
Thank you for doing this, my friend.
Oh, are you kidding
You're
me?
You're so sweet. Love you for that. Yeah. So let's rock and roll. Mary Abigail Wambach, set the scene, please.
All right, so here we are. I am currently in Naples, Florida. I have a little podcasting situation set up. I've got foam around my face.
Okay, so Ab, when Lynn and I were discussing, she actually said, when was the first time you met Abby? And I was like,
ooh. Oh.
I know. Okay, I did the same thing because I was like, I mean, I know it was at a national team camp, but I cannot remember where or when. Do you have a better recollection?
Yes, I do.
You do?
I remember.
Thank you.
I remember my first national team camp and my first national team meal. So I walked in, and this is right before 9/11, by the way, 2001. Yeah. And it was in the Nike Cup, is that what I remember it was called?
Okay.
We were playing in the Nike Cup tournament. We were playing against Germany. That was my first, like, situation. We were going to play more games, but it ended up getting canceled because of the 9/11 attacks. And I remember walking into my first meal room, and Julie Foudy was in there. And this actually had a really big impact on me. And Jules, I'm clear you will not remember this.
Okay.
But I remember the way that you greeted me, being the new kid, being the newcomer.
Aww. Please tell me I was nice.
You were exceptionally nice. You came right up to me. You welcomed me. You know, just were just so wonderful. And so often the meal room is like the space for the national team where you all kind of meet up, right? So it's like usually before night training on the day that you all arrive for the first day of camp. So you're there at lunch or whatever, and you were there, and that totally set the standard for me in the way that I met any new person that came into camp. Didn't matter if they're a player or a staff member. It was like, who are you? And welcome. And like, we're really happy to have you sort of situation. So yes, I remember Julie, cause I think you were probably the only one that actually came up to me and talked to me. you know, Lil didn't speak a word to me for like 2 years. That's for sure.
That was Lil. That wasn't you.
and you know, Mia was very shy. Well, not shy. She just didn't talk to me for a while, but you were out there, and I kind of kept that tradition going on after you left and retired. So I appreciate that and thank you for it.
Wow. That's so nice to hear. I'm so happy. I was saying to Lynn, I don't remember where we were or what national team camp we were at, but I said, the thing I remember about Abby is my first impression will stay with me forever of like, oh my God, this kid who when... As you know, young kids come into the national team, they're quiet and they're timid and they're shy. And it takes...
I'm so embarrassed.
I mean, it can take years to get someone out of their shell. And Abby was just like, hey, what's up? You know, all in from day one. And I was like, oh, I love this about her. This confidence, this boldness, this already at a young age, walking into this completely uncomfortable, inherently uncomfortable environment. Was amazing.
Jules, like that was the nicest way of saying I have nervous energy inside of me. And when I have that nervous energy, I start talking and I can't stop. So that was a really, really sweet way of saying who I really am in moments of nerves and uncomfort that I just am talk. And it's I talked all y'all's ear off. God help you. God save you.
I love it. I loved how bold you were right from the very beginning.
Well, and it sounds Thank like you. There is instant acceptance for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I mean, and also, you know, there's the banter. It's the locker room. It's the being on the bus and it's kicking ideas around and it's shooting each other down and it's, no, what are you talking about? You know, that's what being on a team is so amazing. It's like you get a bunch of people who grew up in different places, who believe different things, or who saw different experiences as children, and you just shoot those ideas around, right? And I think that what makes our women's national team so special is no matter how different or where we came from, everybody can still buy into the one idea, the one philosophy of winning, and that's it, right? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter any of the other stuff, political, religious, or just like personality differences. But when you get on the field, if we can all buy into that one thing, we can actually figure out how to win and get along, right? And I don't know, I think that there's a lot to be said about that and where we are right now in our world.
Yeah,
I just think that it's possible, you know, like there's just this hope.
There's a trust too,
yeah,
right?
Yes.
Like regardless of where you fall on different issues, like I know you got my back when the shit hits the fan. And that's
totally,
it's hard to build in life, which I know has been mission of yours. So
it really is. And, you know, Glennon and I, when we look at we don't really watch the news anymore because it's wild. But when we look at the world and we feel what's happening in the world, I am like the eternal optimist. And she's not, right? Because she didn't grow up on a team and she didn't rise on the women's national team where every day we were experiencing some sort of, you know, disagreement, whether it's off the field or even on the field, right? But like, yet we were still able to win. How is that possible? And it's because you get a group of people together that if you can, no matter what, agree on one thing, you can actually still move forward. You can. It's possible. We proved it. And we keep proving it decade and generation after generation on our national team. It's why people love watching us. It's because personalities aside, it's like winning is, it is the great unifier, and it's possible. So I don't know. I tangented there, but you know, we survive.
That's what we love about podcasts. Tangents are welcome.
Yeah.
One of the things too, Abs, that when we were discussing where to go with this was this journey. I mean, the thing that I keep coming back to when you look at the breadth of your career and life and everything is it has been a damn journey for you, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it has been an incredible journey, but there have been highs and there have been lows. And I think sometimes people just see the shiny and the sparkly and, you know, world's greatest goal scorer, iconic soccer player, and they don't understand what you've had to live through. So, for example, I said to Lynn yesterday, you know, she was cut from the national team at an early stage in her career. And she was like, what?
Yeah, I never knew that.
How is that possible? I was like, yes. I mean, let's start there.
Yeah. Ooh, this is fun. Gosh, I never get to talk about this part. So early on, I struggled to make the transition into the national team. I was doing really well in the club system. So when I got drafted to play for the Freedom in the former WSA.
First women's professional league in the United States. Yep.
Yeah. I happened to get drafted to play on Mia Hamm's team. So early days, she was actually injured when I first got to the team. And so when I was starting to train as a first time professional, she would be on the sidelines watching practice and basically coaching me. And for the first couple of months, I was just getting like the most amazing one-on-one coaching training with one of the best players that I was ever suited up for any team ever played for the women's game. So I felt like I was in a really good position. And so when she found her way back on the field, we were able to develop a connection because I basically, with every fiber of my being, just basically said, not just in words, but in my energy, like, whatever you want, I'm going to do. And I upheld that end of the bargain throughout the time that I got to play with Mia. And because of that, I think that I was able to develop a trust with her that allowed the two of us to develop a dynamic between the two of us that was pretty hard to defend against. I was a big, strong target forward. She was fast, crafty, and, you know, the intellect, the soccer intelligence was off the charts. So combining the strengths that the two of us had was a really hard two front to kind of defend against. But yeah, those early days were really hard for me to make that transition, because I actually remember April Heinrichs, the coach at the time, pulling me aside and asking me, literally asking me, "Abby, are you playing your hardest in practice?" And I said, "No, I'm not. I'm afraid that I'm going to hurt one of these players."
Hurt? Like, what do you mean? Like, physically, like, hurt?
Literally, physically, because you guys were my idols. Like, I had pictures of all of you on my walls growing up, of Lil, of you, of Mia, of April, of Karen Jennings, like all the national team, like, greats. And here I am, I'm 24 years old, 23 years old, playing against you. And I'm, you know, Jules, I'm like 50 pounds heavier than you. And so when we come into a collision, I'm going to hurt you.
I have the scars on my ankle to prove those collisions.
So literally, I just turned my volume down during national teams because I was terrified. And April said to me, and this might be one of the best things a coach ever said to me. She said, "Abby, if you are not playing your hardest, 100% max every practice, you are in fact hurting your team." And I was like, okay, I got it. I got that. And it was like, from that moment on, I started playing hard and she started to give me more time on the field, which obviously gave me chances to score goals. And then as soon as I scored my very first goal for the national team, that was it. I was like, oh, I've done it once. I can do this a bunch more. So my confidence just went through the roof.
Was being cut some sort of wake-up call?
Yeah. I mean, there's something about being really embarrassed for me that sets me straight, so to speak. Having to call my parents and tell them that I got cut and I wasn't going to go to the Algarve Cup that year. That was in 2002, I think. And then, April said, "You got to score more goals. You got to score more goals in your club team." And so I went back to the Freedom and I think I scored 3 goals that weekend. And then got called back into every
camp.
How
do you like me now, April?
Yeah. And that was like right around the time when she was deciding on the World Cup roster. And you remember that like really weird time when the WSA was folding?
Yes.
And the World Cup was starting. And, you know, April called me to her house. I drove from DC to somewhere in Virginia. It was a far place away. And she sat me down and told me that I was going to make the national team World Cup roster. And I was freaking out. I was like, she's either going to cut me or I'm going to make the team, right? So she told me I was going to make it. And then she tells me that I'm going to start most of the games. And I was like, what? I just got here.
No, I'm not ready for that.
I'm not ready for that. Was she crazy?
Amazing that it was that quick of a turn.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that she was just going with the whole idea of, we didn't have as much time to train collectively as a team, as a national team, for that world championship because we were all in our club seasons. So because Mia and I were playing,
tearing it up,
we were playing really well together. She just thought, okay, this is going to be the road we're going to go down. And so I call it trends and forces that were working in my favor for sure.
Yeah. The other trend and force that was operating in that time was those damn Germans who got in our way. Ugh, in 2003.
But Julie, do you remember?
Why did I bring that up?
Do you want to go there?
No, I don't. I don't want to go there.
Yeah, so this is my fault. This is my fault. So it was my mark that scored.
Oh, no.
Are you freaking kidding
me? I was standing in front of her.
No, Gara Freckis scored, and she was my mark. Yes.
That's what I want to call her.
So, yes. Yeah, so listen, this is what happened. You know, before every single game, I have replayed this a million times. So before every single game, April Heinrichs makes us get up and do the whole set plays. So, you know, Corner kicks. We all have to get up and be in the locker room. We're all in our positions of where we're going to be in the corner kicks. This specific game, every scouting report was Gareth Rekus goes to the back post. Everything is to the back
super
post.
Super quick. Can you give me, okay, what is the circumstance, year, tournament, what's going on?
This is World Cup. This is 2003 World Cup. Semifinal. We've Portland, lost the Oregon Olympics in 2000, so I'm already angry. I'm still angry from that. We're in Portland. Yeah. We're at home because it was supposed to be in China, but because of okay, stars, it's back home. Okay.
Semifinal against yep, Germany in Portland. Germany. 2003 yeah, World Cup.
Yes.
I'm caught up.
Corner kick.
Yeah.
Corner kick.
We got to win this game to go to okay, the finals of the World Cup. And it's early in the game. And everything that we've been told, Scott and report, is Gareth Rekus goes to the back post. Gareth Rekus is my
She's
mark.
Tall.
I'm manned to man on Gareth Rekus. And she is a tall German. Well, Gareth Rekus goes and stands her ass on the front post, near post. And Julie, who is in her zone on the front post.
What are you doing here, Gareth? Just,
she goes, what I wanted to say. Julie looks at me and I'm like, Jules, she said everything goes to the back post, but Gareth Rekus is here. And Julie, you go, okay, mark her. But if you see it goes to the back post, get your ass back there.
I did.
And I was like, what? I'm like, how am I supposed to do that? I'm like, okay. So I'm kind of like in between two minds, which as an athlete is the worst place.
Yeah,
to
be. I should have like, just said mark her ass.
So they serve the ball. It goes literally on a it goes on a rope straight to Gareth Rekus's head, and she just pops it in the goal, mm-hmm, right? So my mark scores. We end up losing the game 4-0 because we press forward and they were able to.
Was it four?
I think maybe three. Yeah, three. Maybe 3-0. Yeah. The only other worst loss was Brazil in 07. That was 4-0. That was bad. Also, so Gareth Rekus, she scored and we lost that World Cup, and I have always felt it was all my fault.
But let's fast forward 2004. Huh?
Yes,
okay. Forget Gareth Rekus. We're going to 2004. And you, I mean, after you've lived this journey of being cut from the national team, you get back on, right? We lose the World Cup in 2003. 2004. Let's go back to that gold medal match, because that was a Brazilian yeah, team that was probably one of the better Brazilian teams I've ever seen. Marta in her prime, Cristiano in her prime. Mm-hmm. I mean, Formiga. They had all these amazing players. Ugh. It was the final. Us old bags were in our 30s. So you had Mia old, me old, Joy old. No, Carla was gone. Who
Brandy.
Else? Brandy was old.
Brandy, right? Yeah.
And
yeah,
Abby with that beautiful forehead, which I love to kiss. It just comes off mm-hmm, of it on that header on a corner in a 112th mm-hmm, minute against Brazil. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, we scored. And, you know, this is right around the time where they changed the golden goal. So it was like the year later. They're like, no more golden goal. We're going to play two overtimes. And if it's still tied, you're going to go into penalty kicks. So we still had to play a whole nother, however many minutes, 8 minutes or something. And do you remember that April from the bench was calling a total change of formation? She was calling a total like, no, switch of formation. No. And Julie, our captain, who's in the middle of the field, she's like, no, F that, stay the course. Do not change. We stay the course.
I forgot about that.
And so all of us, and by the way, Julie has like a, your ankle was basically broken.
Oh yeah,
right?
That's Wasn't right. I had like, to shoot it up with like cortisone or something. I yeah, was like dragging
you were like
it.
You were like hobbling around with a cane, it looked like. No, stay the course. Do not change formations. Do not listen to her. Do not listen to our coach.
I can't believe I did that.
I'm 24 years old. I'm like, what the hell is happening right now? And then, you know what's so funny, Jules? Is in 2012, if you fast forward even more, yeah, we did that with Pia.
Oh, no way. So yes, you followed
yes,
my lead.
Yeah, we did. Because in 2011, Pia was one of those coaches who's like, do not dribble to the corner and waste time. That is a travesty to soccer. Do not disrespect the game. You be confident enough to hold on to the ball. Do not waste time to win a game. So we did that. We were trying to do that in 2011. Like, we're just going to keep playing because we're going to listen to Pia. And so that's when, of course, Sawa scores her goal and they end up beating us in penalty kicks. And so in 2012, when the time started to tick down, we were like, take it to the fucking corners. Waste as much time.
Stand
Do
on
not
it.
Listen to her.
Sit on it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And we won. So the players know See? Best is what this
See, it's a good
is.
Audible. They have to sometimes just like believe that you know best. I'm living that moment on the field, sister. Thanks very much, but I'm good.
Oh, 100%.
Sorry, April. I 100%. Still respect you.
What did it mean to you to score that goal and send the 99ers crew out with a win?
Oh, so going back to the 03 loss, feeling like totally responsible for that. You know, I was a kid who came on the team after the 99 Women's World Cup. So having watched them and felt this meteoric rise of these human beings, that they went from virtually unknown quantities to, in my opinion, some of the most popular people, sports figures on the planet. And they were like helping an entire gender, right? Like be seen, like look at what yeah. we can do. And so here I was, this young kid coming on the team, and then I was the one that blew it. I was the one that blew it from being able to do a repeat. So this 04 Olympic gold medal winning header was the kind of like, I don't know, it was relieving more than anything, because then I wouldn't spend the rest of my life kicking my own ass. These women deserve to go out on top, because we all knew at the time that they were going to probably retire, you know, and they deserved it. Julie, you deserved it. Mia, I mean, and Joy, like the three of you walking away, you deserve to walk away as champions. And that was my whole, I mean, I didn't drink. I didn't have I didn't have any soda. I didn't have any fried food. For like 6 months prior to the Olympics, I was like totally, probably the fittest in my career during that time. And the craziest, I think, too. I was like very specific on every little thing. Just because I felt like I had to suffer a little bit for that 03 loss. Oh, but it ended up paying off because you guys were able to walk away.
About the 03 loss. Well, I told Ian, I know you've heard this story before, but I was like, if we don't win this Olympics and I'm retiring, I just want to tell you, I'm going to apologize in advance. I'm going to be a bitch for the rest of my life. Like, you're not going to want to be around me. And if I do not win this, I don't know what's going to happen. And so thank you for that, for understanding.
I mean,
that.
Yes, I
and
feel
Ian
that deeply. I feel that deeply. I felt that about 2015 also. Yeah. It's like, if I don't win a World Cup, like, what will this whole career
I know.
Have
okay,
been?
Good.
It will
yeah.
have been
segue.
Worth
Let's talk. Yeah.
Perfect
We're
segue.
Go there.
Let's go to 15. Okay, I'm going to give a little context. So, you have now, as you're going into the 2015, this would be your fourth World Cup. And amazingly, mm-hmm. you had yet to win a World Cup. So you'd won everything else mm-hmm. in your life. You'd won two Olympic gold mm-hmm. medals. You've won every mm-hmm. award out there at the time.
Not state cup. I failed to win the state cup championship.
High school?
Oh, God. That's right. I remember that.
That was really upsetting. You guys,
There's
we lost.
A documentary
we were winning
on that.
3-0. We were winning 3-0 with 19 minutes left, and we lost 4-3.
But it doesn't
so
stick
it
with you at all.
And anymore. We're continuing on with this story. Continue.
So you go into this World Cup, and I know like how badly, having had many conversations with you on television and off about like just I do not want to end my career without a World Cup. On top of that, you've scored more goals than any other player on the planet. So you go into this World Cup mm-hmm. and this, Abby, when I think about all the things you've done in your career, this one still gives me the chills. Right? Because you go into this World Cup. It's everything that a leader should be. You go into this World Cup on the bench, knowing you're not going to start. And for a lot of leaders, and the reason this means so much to me is, and this is what I preach to the kids all the time in our leadership academy, is that, you know, it's easy to be a leader when everything's going well and you're playing and you're winning or, you know, life is good. But what kind of leader are you when the shit hits the fan and you're mm-hmm. not leading from the front? You're having to lead in a different position. And you talk a ton about this in Wolfpack, your best-selling mm-hmm. book, which is fantastic. Yeah. If you guys don't have it, get it. See it? There it is.
I do. I see it. It's so cute.
But the importance of, in a moment where you're not leading from the front, how could you lead from the back and still be impactful?
But how hard that must have been. How hard was it?
Well, I remember getting, you know, called into Jill's office. Jill Ellis was our coach at the time, and her office was a hotel room. That's it.
Again, maybe we can set the scene. So this would be Canada. Is it?
Yes, we were in Canada
during the tournament already.
Yeah, we were actually through. I think it was after the third game, so we were through the group stage, and we were heading into the knockout round stage. And you know, I'm 35 years old. I know that my tournament is probably going to look a little different. Those knockout round stage games, everybody on this podcast probably knows, but if it's tied at the end of the game, you go into extra time. And so you're playing two 15-minute halves. That's 30 minutes extra soccer and then possibly penalties. And Jill brought me in and she just was like, look, we want you on the field at the end of the game. So if we need to push for a goal, you'll be on the field. And if we need to hold a lead, you'll be on the field. And I got I deeply understood that strategy. I also deeply agreed with the strategy of every single player is going to have to play minutes that matter. In many World Cups of past, you find you're starting 11 and maybe three or four other players that will find many minutes throughout the tournament, and then not many other players will play. This team and all the teams of the future will be very different. Everybody's going to have a role. And everybody's going to have a specific thing that they're going to be very good at. So one of the best in the world at that is going to need to be contributed against a specific opponent, right? So I understood this philosophy and I agreed with it. And so when I was told that I was going to come off the bench for the rest of the tournament, I just remember the air went out of my body and I said, okay, I'm going to go and I'll circle back. That's what I said. I'm going to go and I'll circle back. And I went back into my hotel room and I sat on my bed, and it was very similar to the first times where I was told that I wasn't going to go to Algarve, or I wasn't going to go, or I wasn't going to make a roster, right? It's embarrassing. And I was embarrassed. I was terrified to tell my mom and dad and my family. How does somebody in the position that I was in, I was the former FIFA player of the year, right, and I was leading world, the goal scorer of the world, you know, how am I supposed to respond to this? Like, how is this supposed to go? And quite frankly, the devastation was real, because even though in my heart I knew it was probably the right thing, my ego also has a say in this matter. Right. And my ego also had some feelings around this. So I allowed myself some time to play out both options, like how to respond here. Respond well or not so well.
What does that look like?
And quite frankly, I had to play out both scenarios to the end to understand which response I was going to choose. And I had some former teammates of mine who had experiences in responding in not so great ways that I took into account. So sometimes it's like learning from the people around you of what not to do is really helpful. And so I did. I played both of these scenarios out and I understood, and this is selfish. Truly, this is selfish. I understood that if I was a bad teammate, we would have less of a chance of winning. And that was more important to me than my ego. Winning was more important than me, than my ego and the way that I would be posturing, right? So I decided, okay, I'm pretty competitive. So I was like, I'm going to be the best bench player that ever benched in the world. And I think I did. I think I won the bench game.
So much so they sent you to the end of the bench. You were so loud.
Yeah. Yeah. Jill was like, yo, like, I love this. I love this. I
great
love
energy.
This attitude. But like, just go further down the bench? And you know, the whole time I knew that my teammates would be watching me. But Jules, here's the thing, and I just figured this out within the last couple of months. one of the things I say this a lot, like I think I'm most proud of the way that I responded to this benching than maybe any goal that I ever scored for the US. And that is true. Mm-hmm. But what has also become very clear is this. I didn't understand how much I was going to solidify the respect of my teammates mm-hmm. in the way that I responded. Because now, like when the shit hits the fan of some of those teammates that I had shared that field with, when the shit hits the fan, when babies happen, when marriages happen, when divorces happen, when like anything that's going on, these women trust me mm-hmm. because I showed up for yeah. them, because I showed up for us. And that wasn't because when the thing was going well and I was telling everybody how much they mattered. It was like when the thing was going poorly exactly. for me, I still stood up for everything that I said
right.
about what I thought a good teammate was. And that is truly the thing that brings me the most confidence and self-esteem from the time that I played on the national team, 100%.
Yeah, because it's one thing to be in a position where you're at the top of your game and you're telling someone who's not at the top of the game, who are spending considerable amounts on the bench, or, you know, apply that to life and anything, right? They're not the top of the ladder. They're, you know, way down the totem pole at work and in a job or not doing well. It's one thing to hear it from that person who's at the top of their game, like, oh yeah, easy for you to say, you're at the top of your game. But when then you're in that mm-hmm. position, and how you respond is when you earn that respect, I think. And that's when the true traits yeah. of a leader come out of, okay, I'm now not at the top of the mountain shouting down. How am I gonna deal with this? Because we know there's a lot who don't deal with it well. And I just, mm-hmm. I mean, that moment, I still get the chills when I think about it, because it said so much about you.
Well, let me tell you, it wasn't easy. Mm-hmm. Like, it was the hardest tournament I ever played in my whole life.
Oh, yeah.
It was hard not starting. It was hard not having, you know, I'm a control freak. I wanted to be on the field. And as a competitor, I still felt like I could impact the game in a positive way. But it didn't matter what I thought. Like, we are all given certain roles, and we have to make the best of the things that we are given. And everything I had yet to learn about leadership was sitting right there on the bench. Like, who freaking knew, like, the irony of that, you know? And I think about all the things that I ever said to some of those players who didn't get a lot of time on the field, who didn't get a lot of minutes playing. You matter, right? Mm-hmm. Like you being positive, like, it helps me, it helps us. And so truly, I just, like, channeled my inner best bench player. And quite frankly, Jules, I wouldn't be talking to you today about having written two books about leadership had I not been yeah. given this bench role
right.
to literally learn what it was like to
yeah.
have to figure out and manage a group of women from a different perspective.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was hard. It was not easy, but it's possible. Like, we're adults. When we're handed crap, we still do get to decide what we're going to do with that bag of shit, you know? Right, we get right. to decide. Like, I just don't adhere to the mindset that so many people do, that it's like, oh, well, I can't help it. It's like, okay, if we're going to find victim, if we're going to, like, point out the victims of the world, don't let it be you, mm-hmm. right? Like, we get to decide how to navigate through some of life's,
well, and that's the thing. That's You've had some crap thrown at you. I mean, and that's the journey that I look at. I mean, fast forward again, right? You go through this incredible moment where you go from a really high of winning the World Cup finally after four tries, leading from the mm-hmm. bench, right? And then you go into this transition of star, iconic, legendary soccer player to retired athlete, and the dreaded question of, okay, what does this next phase look like? I hate when people ask this that time. Question, by the way. It's like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Julie, you've right? asked that question yeah. to our guests before.
I know.
Maybe we should stop asking that question.
It's the worst. Well, in that moment when you're like, I don't know.
We've asked people at that moment, I think, too.
Yeah.
This is the thing about retirement from sport, because I feel like we talk about, you know, as a pro athlete, when you're like, oh, well, when I retire, like, we actually have to talk about it differently, because we're not retiring, period. Like, that's a totally different ballgame. That's like in 35 years, you know? This is a retirement from this identity. This is like a complete identity shift. And nobody has the right information. Truly, there is such little information about this transition for any of us. Something that I learned, and it's not okay. And I'm trying to solve for that right now, to make sure that some of those next players who want to walk away have a little bit of an easier path. But the reality is, when you do something at that level for so long, there is going to be some suffering. Mm-hmm. And I went through a really hard time. And it wasn't because I was at the highest high on the national team. It wasn't because we had just won the World Cup. Mostly it was because I was so terrified of having no idea what the hell I was going to do mm-hmm. next. And that imploded all the parts of my life, because you have to have this complete singular focus on playing for so long that once you start opening up like your focus to like get a little peripheral vision on, oh, there's a real world out here, it is terrifying. Like, I didn't know how to keep my own calendar. I didn't know how to do like normal things. I was a pro athlete. I liked people holding my hand and doing things for me.
Your schedule under your door every day. It's like, yes.
Exactly. Totally. And I'm a very good rule follower. Like, I'll do, if you just put it under there, I will do everything on that list. You're damn right I will. But when given the task of creating a whole new life, it just felt so terrifying. And at the time, my marriage was falling apart. And I was suffering big time with alcohol and prescription drugs because of all of the injuries that I had occurred on the field. And I started abusing those prescription drugs. And then, you know, one fateful night, I get behind the wheel of a car having had drank too much on a golf course. Biggest mistake of my life, but best thing that ever happened to me. I get arrested for DUII, and I actually just told this story the other day to some college kids. It was so ironic because, you know, when you get put in jail, they will take away your shoelaces so as to not harm yourself or somebody else, because we were in like a community hold. I was with other women in this jail. And I happened to, of course, be a lesbian. So I was wearing Birkenstocks. So I didn't have laces. So I was good on that front. But what that did was it gave me the wrong idea about me actually not belonging there. For the first few hours of being in this jail, I just kept watching these women shuffling their feet around because they'd be walking, and they would shuffle their shoes because they didn't have any
laces
in their shoes. And I was like, God, these people are there. Those people are crazy. There's something wrong with them. And I couldn't figure out that I was them until I sobered up, until I figured out, oh, Jesus, this is not good, right? My life is over. I thought that I ruined every kind of bit of goodwill that I had gained on the national team. Mm. My face was on ESPN ticker for a solid 6 or 7 days. And that was enough embarrassment that will last a lifetime for me. I've been sober since.
Mm-hmm. Did you just make a decision that night?
Yeah, so a few things happened. Number one, I get arrested and I had to go through this program that I basically plead guilty to the DUII. And if I go through a diversion program of not drinking or not doing any drugs for 1 year, and I would have to take drug tests, then this whole situation would be erased from my record. So I chose that, of course. Right. And it was really cool because when the lawyers sat down at my kitchen table the next day explaining the process, I sobbed so hard, because when you're an addict and you don't have control, and somebody else just goes and grabs that little bit of control to give you a little bit of momentum to get on the other side of this addiction that kind of had it's Talon's in me. I just sobbed. I sobbed in relief because now I didn't have to, it wasn't up to me. Somebody else had it. And I knew that it was going to give me enough time to build up enough strength to be able to do it myself after that year. And that's exactly what happened. That diversion program truly saved my life. And also meeting Glennon a month later helped.
I know the timing of that. Lynn and I both talked about that.
Yeah. I mean, walking into that room and meeting Glennon absolutely changed my life, because one thing I was struggling with was I didn't have a life, or I had never created a life without friends that what we did was like go to bars, you know, like that was the only way that I knew how to people and like do life. And Glennon, I honestly think she was like maybe one of the first people that was like living a sober life that I felt like, oh, she's able to do life sober. It was like the first time I ever thought of it as a possibility. And quite frankly, we would have missed each other had I not made that choice, you know? And I think that there's something super serendipitous about that. And you know, I just am so grateful for it, because addiction can really create the habit of what you're doing on a daily basis. And for me, I was numbing a lot of the stressors and the terror of what I was going to do next. And had it not been for that DUI, had it not been for meeting Glennon, like I now know that sometimes when life does things like this, it's, you got to listen. They're like little whispers. Oprah says, like, when life sends you whispers, you should listen, because otherwise life will send you a brick and it will land right in your face.
And that hurts.
And that not only hurts, but it forces you to listen. So yeah, I'm so proud of the way that I've responded to this. I also, you know, had to call my mom from jail, and that was really sucky. You know, I'm 35 years old. Why am I calling my mother? Like, that's so weird, you know? And I don't know. I just think that there's so much to be learned from time spent in a sober existence.
How many years now?
It's been almost 5 years, wow. which is astounding. I mean, Jules, you know how I used to be. I was just a wild child. But everything good in my life, I feel like I have my life in order. And, you know, it's chaos on a daily basis. But for the most part, I'm like, wow, chaos, I've got my shit together. Like, good job. And
yes, look
every
at me.
Day. Yeah, every day it feels like that confidence keeps getting larger and larger and larger. And so if you're out there and you are attempting or struggling or afraid of even talking out loud about maybe you thinking about having some sort of addiction or a substance abuse problem, you know, what they say is if you're thinking about it, it's usually probably a little true. So lean into that. And there's meetings you can go to. There's so many professionals that you can go to, and you are not alone. One thing that Glennon made me feel so seen when we first met is I was trying to figure out if I was going to include this in the book, the memoir forward that I wrote. And I knew Glennon was a really successful truth-telling author. And I just said, Glennon, I just don't know what to do. And I feel like maybe you could help me with this to help navigate whether or not I should tell the story in my memoir. And she just touched my arm, which was electric, by the way. And she goes, oh, so see, here in the real world, we like real people. And you should probably tell your true story. And she said, and also, don't worry, my rap sheet is as long as your arm. And look at me. I'm at the time, I think she was 15 years sober. She's like, you know, it will not last forever, what you're feeling right now.
And it takes the shame out of it, right? Which is what the barrier is to so many seeking help.
The shame is what keeps people in their addiction. If you can I mean, Glennon is radically shameless, and I keep learning from her.
Radically sure. Shameless. That could be a book title.
It's good.
The next one.
The next one. I never want to write another book. They're so hard. Julie, you've written a book.
It's hard. I know. I had to hyperventilate into a bag many times. What about now? Like, as you've made the transition, right? You're still navigating, though, I'm still navigating at 50, you know, what I want to do and how I want to do it.
She's 50.
I'm 50. I said that with such confidence, too. I'm 50. What do you draw on that you learned from this journey?
Well, one thing that I know to be true is that I am still forging ahead and trying to lay bricks and a path for the players who come behind me to have a better experience than I did right here in my fifth year of retirement. Not many people know this, but I have been able to make probably 3 times as much money in my retirement than I did as a national team player in the 15 years that I played. And I say that for a reason, not because I want to brag about how much money I've made, because it's, you know, it's not crazy amount. But I say it because we still have a long way to go mm-hmm. on how we're paying our athletes and the life that they will be able to step into in their retirement. You know, I stood on stage next to Kobe and Peyton, and may Kobe rest in peace, on that ESPY stage. And the three of us just walked into very different retirements. I am hell-bent on making sure that doors are open, and not just the doors, but the tables that you walk into and sit around aren't mm-hmm. just chairs, because that still insinuates that table is being owned by somebody else. Mm-hmm. We need to own the shit, Jules. Mm-hmm. We need to own the shit. So I am trying to figure out unique and creative ways to own the shit, not just for me, but for all of us. You know, I think that's why we all jumped at the chance of being a part of Angel City FC, mm-hmm. Because that is where the power lies, mm-hmm. and that is how we actually change the world institutionally from the ground up, not just from the top down. So for
that's so funny. I just had that conversation with a friend. I was like, you know what? I'm going to start owning stuff. I'm going to start getting equity and stuff. I don't need to work for something. I'm going to start owning. And she's like, oh, go, sister. I was like, yes.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, look, when I retired, Kobe, he was starting his own investment fund. And he asked me if I wanted to invest. And I was like, yes, I want to invest. And he's like, okay, the minimum is $500,000.
Yeah, okay.
And I was like, oh, well, thank you very much.
Good talk.
I got to go find a job for the next few years to be able to pay my minimum here.
Talking to
Debbie. Do you do a layaway? Do you do layaway? So what I'm trying to figure out is, you know, I'm finding myself in conversations in the finance and the investment world. I'm very interested in early stage angel investing, venture capital investing. And I'm trying to figure out a way that democratizes investments for not just professional women in sport, but just for women. Yeah. So, you know, I have big, big vision goals. But I'm, you know, when I think about raising money and having women own parts of this fund and own percentage shares and equity in companies, like, that is where the power lies. Yeah. And there just aren't enough women in the space because the minimums are too high. Right. Yeah. So how can we collectively solve for this? So I've got some really cool things that are coming up personally, speaking wise, and trying to come up with a way to help the professional sports women of the world in all sports to retire well, to have retirement. I mean, Jules, I didn't have a retirement package.
Right, I know.
And that, even if it's just set up, right? Like, even if there's just like a vehicle that you see that you can invest a couple hundred dollars, even a year, and you see that investment and, you know, as a pro athlete, we weren't getting paid. And the current players in NWSL aren't getting paid enough.
And you don't just talk the talk, right? This is what I've always loved about you. You walk the walk. I mean, our first Zoom call with Angel City and all the owners, Lynn, Abby, the first thing we bring up, it's literally the Zoom call's like, oh, hey, Natalie Portman. Oh, hey, Eva Longoria. What's happening? Oh, hi, America Ferreira. Like, it's crazy. And Abby, first thing she says is, how can we create a retirement fund for the players? Like, let's start thinking that way. And on top of that, I mean, the thing you don't take enough credit for, I don't think, in life is the impact you have by the things and actions you've done and the words you've said. Natalie Portman, who is the godmother of Angel City and really the catalyst behind all of this, says the reason she started a women's professional soccer team is she heard Abby talking about this very thing, and thought, why can't we change it? And bless her soul, she didn't just say, why can't we change it? She then acted on it. And now we have this incredible group at Angel City. So, but that starts with you, sister.
Yeah, I mean, look, that starts with all of us. I think that I just happened to be on that stage. And the irony, Jules, and I'll tell you and your listeners this, I think that was I felt when I walked off that stage, because there was a lot of famous people in that crowd. When I walked off that stage.
Time's up event, right?
Yeah, when I walked off that stage, that was like the biggest bomb of my professional speaking career. Like, I felt like I had never spoke so poorly in my life.
Seriously?
It's literally, so when Glennon and I talk about it, because she was there, Glennon was in the audience, we call it, because it was called a fireside chat. So our inside joke is anytime I say fireside chat between Glennon and I, she knows like, oh, the fireside chat, right? So the irony that this opportunity arose from fireside chat, Abby.
The fireside chat started a professional women's soccer team in LA that's going to change the way we do women's professional sports.
I mean, you just never know. There appears to be a theme.
If Abby Wambach has a fail, you better watch out, because things are going to turn around. Something big is coming.
Shit going to happen. That should be your company. Shit going to happen.
Shit going to happen pretty soon. Just be patient. We are all our own stars in our own specific movies. And I have had a really, really cool first couple of acts in my life. And my 40s have been exceptional so far. We're moving to the West Coast in 4 or 5 months. And I'm
what?
So excited. Yes.
Breaking news.
You were just telling me this?
Yes.
Shit gonna happen? What?
Yes. We are moving to LA, Jules.
Oh, shut up. How am I just hearing about this on a damn podcast? I'm so angry at you two right now. I know. Do you need a realtor? Do you need a house?
We found a house. We're putting an offer in today.
Ooh, yes. Whoa!
I know.
Shut up.
I know. It's so wonderful.
Wait, congrats. Are you going back to Hermosa? Where are you going?
Yeah, we're going to be in Hermosa. North Hermosa.
Oh, Mia is going to be so excited.
I know. She's actually been in cahoots with us because we've needed her to go look at some property.
Wow.
Just
to,
that's get a, so...
Do we need to like come there during the COVID time, you know?
Right.
So we are beyond excited. And our kids are on board. And Craig, we're all moving. One big happy family.
Oh,
we're
no like, way.
Wait, Craig's coming too? Because I was just thinking.
Where we go one, we go all, baby.
Oh, I'm so happy. I was just thinking, oh God, that's going to be so hard on Craig.
No, he's coming. Yay. Yeah, he's going to rent a, you know, he's going to have a house there. And we're going to have a house there. And the kids are going to be little beach kids.
That makes
beach
me
kids.
So happy.
Yeah, it's
the cool. Whole modern family's going west. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, Lynn Game. Abby, I know that you still have your competitive juices flowing. I'm just warning you, I'm really good at the Lynn Game.
I don't know what practice. This is, so of course you're going to be good.
So good luck.
A little learning curve here.
Well, I'm actually going to, I am going to switch things up here. What? So it's going to be a very level playing field. So for this game, instead of doing multiple choice, it's just going to be yes or no. So I asked each of you to write down on a piece of paper, yes and no. Then you'll have to flash your answer. Yes, right. The theme of this game is, did Glennon say it?
I love this game. And also, I will never live it down if I lose, ever.
We have 5 quotes, best of 5. And ultimately, the question is, did Glennon Doyle say it? And I will require a yes or no answer from each of you after each quote.
At the same time.
And we will time the same time.
Right. Okay. Yeah, you can't. You got to go. Yes or no.
Okay. Okay.
Quote number 1.
Oh, God, I'm really nervous. Unfair.
I just am afraid I'm going to raise the wrong card.
The braver I am, the luckier I get.
Oh, come on. So easy.
We have a yes from Julie, a yes from Abby.
Yes from both of us.
That
yes.
is a Glennon Doyle quote. Yes.
Yes. So easy. Okay. I got it. I love that quote. That's an
quote number 2. Nothing worth having comes easy, Glennon or not. We have a no from both Julie and Abby. That is correct.
Yes! It's called We Can Do Hard Things.
Okay, quote 3. The biggest adventure you can ever take is to live the life of your dreams. What do you both say?
I say yes.
I say no.
Abby gets it. That was Oprah.
Oprah. That's a good one, though. But it will be that I thought she was Oprah.
Yes, that's a good one to get wrong.
2-1. Damn! Okay.
Quote number 4. The most important thing I've learned is that what you do will never define you for long. Who you are always will. What do you both say?
Yes.
What do you both say?
Yes.
Incorrect. Abby Wambach said that.
It was me. Yeah, it was me, but guess who wrote it? I actually win it. Because guess who actually wrote that quote? She is the deep ghostwriter on some of that Wolfpack book. Yes, I win it. Oh my God, I knew that was going to happen. I knew you were going to quote Wolfpack.
That's yes. Wolfpack.
She wrote it.
She wrote that moment. I was like, what do you think about this sentence? She's like, well, let's do it like this. I'm like, okay, perfect.
That sounds better. Wait, read it again.
The most important, this is so good. The most important thing I've learned is that what you do will never define you for long. Who you are always will.
Always will.
Amen.
So that was it was Glennon via Wolfpack. That is not a category that we have sorted. Okay. All right. I'll take the loss on that.
No. We're 2-1. We both got that one specifically wrong, but I just wanted to clarify. I knew who wrote that.
Okay.
Here we go. All right. So we're going on to quote 5. This is the.
Oh, wait, I gotta win this to tie it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I am here to keep becoming truer, more beautiful versions of myself again and again forever. What do you both say?
Yes.
Yes.
Abigail for the win. Yes. If you didn't win that.
I actually think it's 4-3.
Yeah, because you didn't win that.
I got all but that one questionable one wrong. I just want to be clear because I know. Classic. Yeah, because we got the ones that weren't hers correct. Mm-hmm. Also.
Mm-hmm. Well done, Ab.
Thank you.
Okay. Most pressing question. Okay. All right, Abigail. Why did you go, since your name is Mary, I don't know if I've ever asked you this before, Mary Abigail Wambach, why don't you go with Mary?
Yeah. Well.
Not that I see you as a Mary.
I know. So I am the youngest of 7, and my mom is Catholic. We were all raised Catholic. I'm a recovering Catholic. And she had 4 boys right directly in front of me. So there's 2 girls, then 4 boys, and then me. So I'm the last. And my mom prayed, because of those 4 boys, she prayed to the Mary Virgin Mother of God that if she had a little girl, she would put Mary in her name. And so she felt like Mary Abigail just sounded better than Abigail Mary. But they knew all along that they were going to call me Abby.
God, that is
so
good.
That is that story.
That is the true Catholic and family.
But I would tell all the people in the world, don't do that to your kids. Just name them what you want to call them. And
I told my dad when I was pregnant, he's like, I made the mistake of saying, he's like, what are you going to call? It was when I was pregnant with Izzy. What are you going to call her? And I said, I think
like Isabel, Izzy. And he was like, oh, what about Mary Catherine? And I was like, huh? Because Mary Catherine is a great name. I mean, Mary Catherine was the one who sniffed her armpits on Saturday yes, Night Live, remember? Exactly. And then would be like,
and then I smelled like,
okay, Dad. Yeah, thanks. Nope.
Oh my
gonna
gosh.
Be Izzy. Anyways.
All yeah, right. It and name, first of all, it's such a weird thing, like naming a person or things. It's a hard process. I get it. But just don't name your kid something and then not call them that, because then they have to deal with being the first day of school every year. Mary. Mary. Is Mary here? Mary Wombach? Mary Wombach?
Wombach.
And I'm like, I like slowly raise my hand and all of my friends every year look at me like, Mary, what is that? Just like, do your kid a favor and just like call right. them, name them what you're going to call them.
It's good.
Abby, what is your favorite Indigo Girls song?
Closer to Fine, for sure. Or the power of two. Yeah, both of them. And you want to know something so wild? During this pandemic, my wife has gotten so popular with all of the women feminists of the world because of Untamed that like Emily and her are friends and like has offered to give our middle daughter Tish like singing writer song lessons. And they text and they FaceTime. I'm like, I'll come home and she'll just be like, she'll be like on a call in here in this office and she'll be like talking to Emily or Adele. Like I came home one day. Jules, remember we went to the Adele concert in Paris together?
Yes.
That was such a debacle, that's, but it worked yeah. out. But I came home once and she was like in here for 4 hours talking to Adele because, you know, women, when they read this book Untamed, mm-hmm. there is like the insides of them that has never been spoken to before. And with some famous people, they don't have access to realness and truth like this very often. And so they get in touch with my wife and my wife is then busy on the phone with Adele. I'm like, what the hell? Like she's a therapist or something. But no, people have been so touched by her work.
Do you know my infatuation with the Indigo Girls?
Oh my gosh, Jules. I have it also.
That was my band.
I have it also. And by the way, so does Glennon. Glennon has been in Indigo Girls. Do you want to know the first thing that Craig said to Glennon when she told him about me? Mm. He goes, just quietly thinking, and he goes, so is this what all the Indigo Girls is about, Glennon? She goes,
that's his
I don't
first
know.
Thing.
Maybe, I guess.
Classic. Oh, God, I love them.
Yeah, they're the best. And their
I
story.
Once in Sweden, like, stood outside their RV at a bar and was like, let us in! Let us in! They were like, who are these crazy American groupies?
I think Amy Ray just actually came out with a new single album today or something.
Okay. Last segment, Abby, is called High Low Cheer of Your Career. So the high, this is the one we do around the table mm-hmm. with the kids. High of your career, low of your career. And someone, the cheer is someone you are grateful for who has helped you along the way.
Ooh, okay. First of all, I just want to thank you because when we did this a few years ago with me and Glennon, your first podcast, mm-hmm. we stole High Low Cheer and it's actually in the Wolfpack book.
Yeah, I know. I love
Because we just think it's so great. I love this. So a high of my career, it's hard to discriminate between championships. It really is. I have to say, even though we didn't win the 2011 World Cup, I think the thing that made one of the biggest splashes and impacts of my career and of the team at the time was the 2011 goal against Brazil. Mm. Even though we lost that tournament in penalty kicks, still not over that. I scored a freaking goal in overtime in the final, and we still lost that game. Come on, are you kidding me?
That was Father. The most gorgeous goal, too. Oh.
Yeah, so that goal was, I think, one of the highs, because I think it changed the trajectory of my career.
I would argue it changed the trajectory of women's soccer in this country.
Yeah, I think that there was something pretty magical about that moment that, like, mm-hmm. whoa. Like, we do stuff. And it was, and this is not in any way slighting your generation, but we lived in the shadow of the 99 team for so long mm-hmm. that this was like, you know, this is 11, 12 years later. We finally put like our claim on the team. Like, this is our team. Mm-hmm. And we're all still collectively our team, but we wanted to prove our own selves, right? That we were also worthy. And yeah, there was just something really and just crazy amazing about it. High, that's a high. And then low, I mean, every time we lost, every World Cup loss, I would say, and this is true, losing to Brazil in 07, and the way that whole thing went down, you know, I don't think that I made the best calls leadership wise, mm-hmm. You know, hope, the whole hope saga and the way that I felt about the situation, I just didn't handle it as well as I would now.
Okay. Cheer.
Yeah. The cheer. you know, I think about my mom and the ups and downs that I've had with her. I don't know if another human being has had more of a impact on me and becoming who I am, both good and bad, right? Like, some of the hard things that I had to experience actually forged me into the person that I am. And I'm so grateful for it. So if you're having a hard time with your parents, like, maybe it will forge you into something mm-hmm. as strong as you possibly can be to never be broken. But I just can't. You know, I can't think about another person on the planet that is alive that does more good for the people around her. And I know this might sound a little bit cheesy because she's my wife now, but, you know, Glennon is just, it's like she's a gift from God, however that might fall on you. I don't necessarily know what I think about God. I just think that she's an anomaly and something that her gifts just keep going into the world. And for me to be able to be witnessing her experience on planet Earth and to see her and to love her and to support her, it's honestly the greatest gift of my life. So absolutely my wife, she wins. She wins the day.
Well, I my cheer is for you because as I, you know, reflect on knowing you for the past 20 years and watching you in this journey, right? I just constantly go back to the loyalty you have for your teammates, the honor, the passion in which you live your life, the boldness and courageousness in which you do things and that you advocate for women. I mean, those are things, as you know, that are near and dear to me, and you do them so well, Abby. And you're just starting, really. I mean, that's the fun part. I can't wait to see all that's going to come from this. So thank you for taking the time and for being wonderfully you and authentically you, which is an awesomely you, which is so fun to watch over these years.
Thanks, Jules. Thanks, Lynn. You guys are great. I'll be back anytime. So just keep inviting me.
Well, that's nice to know. Sweet, Abs. We'll see you next week.
She's welcome anytime.
Anytime,
Abs. Anytime.
Okay, Lynn. Takeaways, my dear?
Sure. My takeaway is about how Abby talked about how she remembered meeting you for the first time because of how welcoming you were and that it made such an impression that she wanted to carry on that tradition. And it reminded me of a great quote from Maya Angelou. Are you ready for the quote?
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Yes.
From Maya Angelou, she said, I've learned that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel.
Mm. Nice.
So I think both you and Abby take that to heart for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, oh no, when she started that story. Oh gosh, where is this going? My takeaway is she's coming back to Cali, to Cali. I was thrilled. I can't believe I learned that in the podcast, which means Angel City Games. Let's go. 2022.
Those will be fun.
I know. And of course, just watching Abby evolve and grow and to see her so happy. That warms my heart. Warms my heart because I know she has indeed had a journey. Questions permitted, Lynn.
Yes. This question comes from a listener who has been with us since the beginning. His name is Hank Olzawi.
Hank.
Also known as my dad. I solicited a question from him and he had a good one. It's something we have talked about before, but I thought because it's the beginning of a new season that we could revisit it. So the Big O's question is, how did you come up with the name Laughter Permitted?
Well, thank you, Hank, for asking that. We came up with the name because at our Julie Foudy Sports Leadership Academies, we had a theme among our staff and with the kids. We used to joke with them and say, hey, yo, laughter permitted, when it got quiet or serious. And one of the big things we always discuss at the academy is how sports are fun and there should be celebration and laughter. And it's what honestly was such a mainstay of the U.S. women's national team. Wherever we went, there was laughter and pranks and jokes and joy. And so you one day said to me, Laughter Permitted, that could be our podcast name. And I was like, oh, very nice. You're right.
Speaking of JFSLA traditions, fun traditions, Julie, can I get an and I?
Oh, gosh. I can't believe we haven't done this with a guest, honestly.
I'm waiting.
Okay. And I will always love you. It's, and Lynn, it's hit me with an and I.
Oh, hit me with an and I.
And I, So that's Jen Adams and Dana Dobbs, Dobie, who does they run our lacrosse. They're two rock stars, lacrosse legends who run our lacrosse at the academy. And that's something they brought. They'd say to one of their staff members in the middle of like our huge evening session with the whole camp, hey, hit me with an and I. And then the staff, and you have to do it. That's the thing. You have to deliver. So we do that at camp quite a bit. Ah, good times, good times.
We might have to do that a bit this season.
Yeah.
A new wrinkle, if you will.
Any excuse I get to belt it out, I'm all in.
And on that note, I do apologize to our listeners who had to turn down the volume just a little bit.
All right, that does it for this episode, our first of season 5. Thanks, as always, to Ally Bank, our presenting sponsor from day one, and Dick's Sporting Goods. Two great companies supporting women and this dope village. Please show them some love. Thanks to our friend Kate Diaz for our theme song, which she wrote and composed. Please check out her music. And remember, as always, kids, sing it with us.
Laughter permitted.
Gara Freckis scored, and she was my mark.
Hey there, Dope Village. Be sure to check out America's Caddy on ESPN Plus, hosted by Michael Collins. He's the longtime caddy, comedian, and ESPN golf analyst who interviews the biggest stars in the game. America's Caddy is part travelogue, part golf history lesson, and part celebrity hangout. Full of laughs. Streaming now on ESPN Plus. Also, Daily Wager is a new podcast for all your information on tonight's games. Listen every weekday afternoon for the latest info on the biggest games and plays. That's Daily Wager. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.